Welcome. On a Wednesday afternoon, a cold one at that, one where the bushes outside of Freeborn Hall have been wrapped for their own protection. Welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. As Dizzy Gillespie just told you, this radio station is KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. And at this station, you can hear round-the-clock musical presentations, interpretations, celebrations that you're not going to hear anywhere else on the FM or AM dial. Also here at KDVS, we offer a great number of public affairs programs, such as this one, Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. I've been doing this show for a decade now. And over those 10 years, I've had a great number of high-profile guests. Guests whose books you've read, if you've read the books of Sherman Alexie or Gary Snyder or Margaret Atwood or that guy who ran for president on the Green Party, whose name always escapes me, but who is responsible for the seatbelt in your car. All of these people have appeared on this radio show to discuss with me poetry and other topics. And during that time, I've impressed you all with the caliber of my guests. But in the earliest years of this show, it was more of a news and commentary program. One where I would start talking and you'd hear a little bit of jazz in the background. And I would reflect on something that happened that week in the world of poetry or technology. This is before we regularly had theatrical types on this show. Before the age of Dr. Andy's interns. I have 3 interns this quarter. So many people to help me help you. If by help we mean connecting you with fascinating poets, technology pundits and wonks, and other creative types. For today's show, however, we're going to go old school. Although in the second half of the program, we'll be joined by Paul Corman Roberts, who's the author of a number of books, lives in Oakland, California with his wife and daughter. We're going to have him on the program. But for the first half, it's just the two of us. And the recorded voices of a great number of poets who I've chosen, especially to break our occasional conversations, our uncomfortable silences, and to interrupt the phone calls that you may want to share with me this afternoon, if indeed you are so inclined to call me with a poem, maybe a technology comment here on KDVS, where the phone numbers are 530-752-2777 and 754 KDVS. I'd welcome your call, but I'd also welcome your silence, because I've got plenty of jazz and plenty of recorded poetry as we kick it old school on this week's edition of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
This hour of programming is brought to you courtesy of the Yolo County Federal Credit Union. The Yolo County Federal Credit Union is a nonprofit financial cooperative with locations throughout Yolo County. The Yolo County Federal Credit Union offers a wide range of financial services and can be reached by phone at 530-668-2700 or online at yolofcu.org. Thank you.
enjoying this. I almost hate to interrupt it. This song is called Blues for DP. It's a Ron Carter production. Ron Carter has an album called Jazz, My Romance. And this is the first track on that album. We've been playing almost exclusively jazz background and bumper music on this radio show over the last 8 years or so. I think it was around then that I first started doing research for a class I taught called Jazz and Literature. Brian Ang, if I remember correctly, was one of my students in that class. He was a freshman then. In the many years since, he's been an impressive undergraduate, a stellar graduate student, and now is lighting things up as a poet and engaging in other radical activities in the Bay Area. Well, back when Brian Ang was just a youth, I was teaching a freshman seminar called Jazz and Literature. Since then, I've been entertaining listeners of this radio show with jazz here and there. The jazz musician, Dick Livingston, stopped me on the street one day and thanked me for all the jazz I play on this radio show. I've got to remember to get him on this particular radio program. One of the great things about jazz is that you might not find exactly what you want when you pick out a random jazz CD, as I did today when I cleared out all of the jazz musicians named Carter. But you do know that you'll almost never encounter any swearing on a jazz CD. They're safe for the afternoon drive. This is Dr. Andy of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. And for the last 10 years, on this date, the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, I've played you all a poem by a poet that I once had to write an obituary for, one of my first publications. That poet is Howard Nemiroff, former poet laureate, lived from 1920 to 1991. I met him in about 1988. So just a few years before he died, he was holding court. I think it was at the campus of George Washington University. Reminded me very much of Late Frost. Not quite as pleased with himself as Late Frost was, but I guess had somewhat fewer reasons to be. An impressive poet, nevertheless. I have a signed copy of his selected poem somewhere in my archives. He called them charitably. And every year on the day before Thanksgiving, I've played a poem by Howard Nemiroff called Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving. I should almost have it memorized by now, all minute and a half of it. Let's hear what Howard Nemiroff has to say about this holiday that starts tomorrow. You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. And here I am, Dr. Andy, once again, introducing you all to Howard Nemiroff, the late great poet, and his poem, Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving. Infant mortality didn't, as they say, claim me, though it damn near did. So I grew what they call up. To the childhood illnesses routine for those times, I added only paratyphoid on my own. Was never starved, nor did my parents whip me or leave me chained to the bed. Nor did I get born a Jew in Germany. Plus, I went to their war and didn't die of it. Leaving aside my adventures among the dentists, Your teeth are fine, but those gums have got to go. My skirmishes with medicine include but a couple of major operations and a few discomfortable bothers with skeleton and strings. Have so far stayed out of asylums and jails, and given the smallth and fewth of my abilities, have been lucky in being steadily employed. Am still with the same dame, have three sons, have lost to death up to this day only a few immediate family and five good friends. So help me, life, I may still make it to the end.
Silent for
this music is almost too bright and Christmassy for the sort of poems that I play or read on this radio show, Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Maybe we'll go to a different Carter. This is Regina Carter's album, Paganini, After a Dream, and a Maurice Ravel piece. Let's see if it works with this Delmore Schwartz poem that I've planned for you all. I'm always skeptical of violins, but this'll do. It's cold outside, especially if you're on a bicycle, as I am today. I've got a new bike. I bought it at B&L Bike Store. I'm excited about it. About to jump on it. Ride home like the wind. Begin the celebrations after this radio show. But I will feel the cold, as will all of you tonight, as was the case last night. The homeless populations of Davis, Woodland, Sacramento could certainly use our attention more so than usual because of how cold it will become late tonight. Here's a poem called The Winter Twilight, Glowing Black and Gold. It's by Delmore Schwartz, who is a rough contemporary of Kenneth Rexroth. Delmore Schwartz also grew, as they say, up, but did not last as long as Rexroth, having died in 1966. The Winter Twilight, Glowing Black and Gold, by Delmore Schwartz. That time of year you may and me behold, when Christmas trees are blazing on the walk, raging against stale snow in the cold and low skies bundled wash, dead white as chalk. Hissing and ravenous, the brilliant plant, rising like eagerness a rushing pyre, as when the tutti foams and the chant soars up, hurrahing from the Easter choir. But this is only true at 4 o'clock. At noon, the fifth year is again abused. I bring a distant girl apples and cake, marbles, pictures, secrets, my swollen heart, now boxed in the learning and music of art. But once more, as before, accepted and refused. Here's another somewhat longer poem by Delmore Schwartz, and a more famous one called The Heavy Bear Who Goes With Me. The heavy bear who goes with me, a manifold honey to smear his face, clumsy and lumbering here and there, the central ton of every place. The hungry, beatish, brooding one, in love with candy, anger, and sleep, crazy factotum, disheveling all, climbs the building, kicks the football, boxes his brother in the hate-ridden city. Breathing at my side, that heavy animal, that heavy bear who sleeps with me, howls in his sleep for a world of sugar, a sweetness intimate as the water's clasp, howls in his sleep because the tightrope trembles and shows the darkness beneath. The strutting show-off is terrified, dressed in his dress suit, bulging his pants, trembles to think that his quivering meat must finally wince to nothing at all. That inescapable animal walks with me, has followed me since the black womb held, moves where I move, distorting my gesture, a caricature, a swollen shadow, a stupid clown of the spirit's motive, perplexes and affronts with his own darkness the secret life of belly and bone, opaque, too near, my private yet unknown stretches to embrace the very deer with whom I would walk without him near, touches her grossly, although a word would bare my heart and make me clear, stumbles, flounders, and strives to be fed, dragging me with him in his mouthing care amid the 100 million of his kind, the scrimmage of appetite everywhere. Now, a word on sleep apnea. As my wife has told me, loud snoring can be a warning sign for sleep apnea, in which the airway becomes blocked during sleep. An estimated 19 million Americans are afflicted with sleep apnea, and only 5% have been diagnosed. Once diagnosed, sleep apnea can be treated effectively and painlessly, but left untreated, sleep apnea can increase risk of heart attack, stroke, and depression. For more information on home testing and on sleep apnea, visit www.sleepsolutions.com or call 877-753-3776. let's try something very different. Let's add a little bit of energy to the afternoon. And to do that, I turn to Dylan Thomas, whose performances were widely and enthusiastically attended. Why, you might ask? Because of the energy that he brought to those readings. For evidence, I offer this.
If I were tickled by the rub of love, a rooking girl who stole me for her side, broke through her straws, breaking my bandaged string. If the red tickle as the cattle calve still set to scratch a laughter from my lung, I would not fear the apple nor the flood nor the bad blood of spring. Shall it be male or female, say the cells, and drop the plum like fire from the flesh? If I were tickled by the hatching hair, the winging bone that sprouted in the heels, the itch of man upon the baby's thigh, I would not fear the gallows, nor the axe, nor the crossed sticks of war. Shall it be male or female, say the fingers that chalk the walls with green girls and their men? I would not fear the muscling in of love if I were tickled by the urchin hungers rehearsing heat upon a raw-edged nerve. I would not fear the devil in the loin nor the outspoken grave. If I were tickled by the lover's rub that wipes away not crow's foot nor the lock of sick old manhood on the fallen jaws, time and the crabs and the sweethearting crib would leave me cold as butter for the flies. The sea of scums could drown me as it broke dead on the sweetheart's toes. This world is half the devil's and my own, daft with a drug that's smoking in a girl and curling round the bud that forks her eye. An old man's shank, one marrowed with my bone, and all the herrings smelling in the sea. I sit and watch the worm beneath my nail, wearing the quick away. And that's the rub, the only rub that tickles. The knobbly ape that swings along his sex from damp love darkness and the nurse's twist can never raise the midnight of a chuckle, nor when he finds a beauty in the breast of lover, mother, lover, or his 6 feet in the rubbing dust. And what's the rub? Death's feather on the nerve. Your mouth, my love, the thistle in the kiss. My jack of Christ, born thorny on the tree. The words of death are drier than his stiff. My wordy wounds are printed with your hair. I would be tickled by the rub that is. Man, be my metaphor.
Listening to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM, Davis. Thanks very much for tuning in this afternoon. It's our pre-Thanksgiving program. Perhaps you're driving down I-80. Driving may be too strong a word. Perhaps you're ambling at a reduced pace due to all the friends who are also ambling to find their families at some distance. On this radio show, we combine the worlds, whenever possible, of poetry and technology. Here on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, I sometimes depend upon technological gadgets to provide me my poetry, and I'll share with you an example now. I'm looking now at an app. It's put out by the Poetry Foundation. It's called Discover Poetry. It gives you an opportunity to spin the wheel of poetry, and it combines together for you sentiments and topics. For instance, it found me 12 poems on optimism and family. I thought, that is a fine idea. Let's choose one of those poems. This one by Walter de la Mare, called Winter Dusk. And plumb the depths and the strengths of its optimism here on this winter afternoon, the day before Thanksgiving. First, a little music from Ron Carter. Winter Dusk by Walter de la Mare. Dark frost was in the air without. The dusk was still with cold and gloom, when less than even a shadow came and stood within the room. But of the three around the fire, none turned a questioning head to look. Still read a clear voice, on and on, still stooped they o'er their book. The children watched their mother's eyes, moving unsoftly, line to line. It seemed to listen to that shade, yet made no outward sign. The fire flames crooned a tiny song. No cold wind stirred the wintry tree. The children both in fairy dreamed beside their mother's knee. And nearer yet that spirit drew, above the heedless one, intent only on what the simple words of her small story meant. No voiceless sorrow grieved her mind, no memory her bosom stirred, nor dreamed she, as she read to two, 'twas surely three who heard. Yet when, the story done, she smiled from face to face, serene and clear, a love, half dead, half dread, sprang up as she leaned close and drew them near. Thank you. Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM, Davis. Hope you've enjoyed the jazz of Ron Carter this afternoon as we've been sharing poems and now sharing poets. Paul Corman Roberts is my guest this afternoon on the radio show. Paul Corman Roberts is the author of the poetry and flash collections Coming World, Gone World from Howling Dog Press and Neo Commuter from Tainted Coffee Press, as well as the forthcoming poetry chapbook 19th Street Station from FOC Chap Editions 2011. He's the fiction editor for the Full of Crow online zine. He lives in Oakland, California with his wife and daughter, and we've caught him on the live line. Paul Corman Roberts, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. It's great to have you here. And I know that we have some mutual friends. Many people have spoken highly of you and your poetry. You're one of those necessary people who is kind of an advocate, who prides himself on his outreach, who also connects poets with other poets and audiences, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I tell people at my best I am a connector.
Right.
Sometimes I don't always think of myself as a poet so much, although, you know, that's, you know, who knows how many of us get into the poetry racket to begin with. You know, I think we take many, many roads to get there, but I think also poetry is a very transitional form. It leads you to so many other places as well. But I think what really defines us as poets is the fact that we keep that. It stays our base. I certainly view poetry as the base from which I work. But from there, you know, I'm meeting all kinds of artists, not just poets, but writers, fiction writers, nonfiction writers, visual artists, filmmakers, musicians, and, you know, and just trying to connect all of them in as many ways as is possible. Sometimes it's, of course, you have your spectacular failures, but, you know, but those moments when it works spectacular make all the failures worth it. So, yeah, I like to see myself as a connector, and that's, you know, just getting different processes and different projects together. I think that's the way the dialectic really works.
Oh, I agree with you. Well, tell me, for people who don't know your work in the Bay Area, what have been, in addition to the books I just mentioned, what have been some of your projects, your haunts, your enthusiasms when it comes to the world of poetry?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I've done a lot of editing and a lot of producing. I was a poetry editor for Cherry Bleeds magazine, an online zine, which is wrapping up. It's going to have its final issue probably sometime in early 2011. But I did that for 4 years, and from that I began, and I had some experience in grad school of producing sort of open mic poetry readings, and from there I've moved on to sort of producing featured readings with different themes. And one of the things we're really excited about is a project where we have, it started with a series that I co-produced called Anger Management and Revenge,
uh-huh.
which we produced at a couple of venues here in San Francisco. And the, you know, the idea is that this is sort of an open, it is a bit of an open kind of reading, but it goes across the nation where we put out a call for submissions, and we're about to do a big one, for the community here and, for Anger Management Revenge 5, which is happening on February 13th. But anybody across the country or in the world for that matter, because we do it online, can submit work to be considered for the reading series. If somebody is across the ocean or across the country and can't attend the actual reading event itself, then we have but we really like their piece. We accept it. We ask them, hey, is it okay if we have a proxy reader perform your reading for you? And then they do that. And then what we try to do is sometimes we try to set up a live stream, and that doesn't always work, but we still record, with their permission, we record the performance. And so they can submit a poem, have it accepted, and see another poet interpret their work later on YouTube or Vimeo or whatever winds up being the medium of choice there visually. And it brings a lot of people together across the world into one and it's very exciting to do that.
Oh, that's a lot of fun. And so you're combining poetry and technology there, but also the great creative energy and traditions of poetry of the Bay Area, along with the younger traditions of technology innovation of that area, and also neighborhoods to the south of you.
Absolutely. We're experiencing, at least I find in California and in the West Coast and maybe a few other communities across the country, an incredible boom, an incredible resurgence in the spoken word art form. And so much of it is so obviously driven by technology, by people who are really have connected to each other in ways that they haven't before via, you know, the social networks on the Internet. Suddenly, wow, there's a real comprehensive listing of the events, and you can see so many things going on. And it's really pushed. I mean, I've really experienced it myself. You know, you find yourself sort of on this bubble that's growing and growing and growing. There's more people involved, and they're amazing, and it's exciting, and everybody has these ideas bubbling, and they're not waiting. You know, they're not waiting around for permission or producers to get it on. They're just deciding to put these things on themselves because they feel like they have the energy behind them. A lot of it, obviously, emanating from the technology.
That's wonderful. Well, in terms of the audiences that you've been a part of or the audiences that you've drawn, is there a way to characterize them? I'm sure a lot of them are poets as well. But tell me something about the makeup or the size of some of the audiences that you've been at least partially responsible for drawing for these events.
I think what we are doing is seeing a lot of this really built out of, you know, the sort of Bay Area countercultural movement. I guess what some people would just laughingly call fourth or fifth generation beat poets out of San Francisco. They're not really, you know, the generation, the post beat generation they called the baby beats. Those people are they're all grandparents now.
Right.
And really moving on. And you know, people my age, we go to them, we go up to North Beach into the bars. Jack Hirschman tells us about, you know, they tell us stories about Allen Ginsberg and Gregory Corso and Bob Kaufman and those guys. And it's funny, we're not getting a ton of those types of people, but we are getting, we're getting a real nice combination of the city street poets. You know, the countercultural tradition of the Bay Area is really starting to cross over with a lot of mainstream literary types. You know, these readings, we found that, novelists with book deals are just as interested or just as drawn to these types of events as the street culture is. And I think when we get those two cultures together intermingling in one reading, I think it just further blurs the lines or breaks down the barriers between the various literary factions, or, you know, it removes the balkanization that I think is a little more, you know, prevalent in what people have been aware of over the years, and that there do seem to be ways through and around that, and reaching in. I mean, we want to bring in the slam poetry community to this. We want to bring in, you know, some literary genre to it as well. It's trying to mix it up and make it as varied as possible.
Would you say, and I'll just remind folks at home, that Paul Corman Roberts is my guest. He's a Bay Area poet who's the author of a few books and who's an enthusiast for poetry. It sounds mostly like for other people's poetry at the various venues where he's helped to bring audiences and poets and other sorts of artists together. Would you say that your own influences are as varied, Paul Corman Roberts, or are there specific traditions that you see yourself participating in or learning from as a poet?
There are. I'd say probably my core tradition is probably, you know, the old classic Greek drama. My first school was the theater. And so a lot of my poetry, a lot of my specific type of work tends to be written in with different voices going on, because I always feel different characters at work, and I always feel a drama playing out. And my poetry comes from an effort to capture that. In the old days, in the classic days of the Greeks, the poets and the playwrights were the same people, and I think they probably used similar processes to write the things that they did. So I hear a lot of different voices in the poems that I write. I'll work in call and response into my poems without being very explicit about the fact that it's a call and response. Some readers can pick up on that. Maybe others will interpret a single voice, and if they do, that's great. I think that's fantastic, because whatever place I'm coming from, I don't necessarily need to have an audience or a reader interpret it exactly the way that I meant it. As long as the writing is good, I think the writing will resonate with the reader, and that's my core belief. That I think is the really transcendent power of poetry right there. So that's my core. And then coming out of that and growing out of theater into writing, and taking, you know, graduate writing courses. You know, I meet other traditions. I'm very, very influenced by beat poets, particularly Bob Kaufman, San Francisco beat poet Bob Kaufman. I realize, especially in the street-based poetry of the city, is a huge, huge influence on me. So I bring that to the mix as well.
Wonderful. Well, we're going to take a quick musical break, Paul, and play a public service announcement. And then when we come back, I was hoping that you could perform something for us.
Oh, I should be able to give you a little something. Sure, no problem.
Excellent. Well, if you're just joining us, Paul Corman Roberts is my guest this afternoon on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We're talking with great enthusiasm about ways of connecting theater, poetry, the arts, and also the world of technology here on KDVS 90.3 FM, Davis.
For children in hospitals who face days or even weeks of recovery time, homework does more than keep them up to date in school. It can provide a sense of normalcy and focus. While most of a child's stay involves physical recovery and healing, schoolwork can help boost mental health. It can remind children that their familiar daily routine still exists outside the hospital. At Shriners Hospitals, this type of continuous learning is either provided by teachers from local school districts or by teachers on staff at the hospital. Shriners Hospitals provide free orthopedic and burn treatment to children under 18. If you know a child Shriners can help, call 1-800-237-5055. Or visit www.shrinershq.org.
Everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Paul Corman Roberts is my guest this afternoon, and he's the author of the Poetry and Flash collections Neo Commuter and Coming World, Gone World. His short story, The Deathbed Confession of Christopher Walken, what a great title, will appear in a forthcoming edition of Subterranean Magazine. He is also the fiction editor for The Full Crow, which is an online zine. If you want to find out more about him, you can visit Paul Corman Roberts. com. All right, Paul, what have you decided to share with listeners of this radio show this afternoon?
This is a poem, one of my signature poems. It's called The Ninth, and it deals with the process. Although a nice title like The Ninth makes it sound like a baseball poem. I wish it were a baseball poem, but it comes clear. And so I'll simply introduce it as The Ninth. There is a feeling. Perhaps you creative types know. The picture, the sculpture, the song, or the poem, yes, that particular poem, which grew from your bosom to your heart, through your arms, out your wrists, onto the blank piece of paper in 10 minutes or less. Are you kidding me? No, 10 minutes or less. Such a beautifully crafted poem. Needing only one edit, and even that one, questionable. It was like it wasn't even you who wrote it. And so your beautifully crafted poem quickly makes the final round of an esteemed local literary magazine contest. Your beautifully crafted poem quickly makes the final round of an esteemed local poetry slam. Your beautifully crafted poem quickly garners you an orgasm with the most beautiful person, the most beautiful genitalia you could possibly hope to share an orgasm with. But that feeling is not the feeling that I'm talking about. I'm talking about the feeling you get the day after when the most beautiful person with the most beautiful genitalia has gone back to their life and when the Poetry Slam is looking for a new champion and the local literary magazine has a new deadline. And you are left with your beautifully crafted poem and all the space on the page thereafter. That feeling is how God felt on the eighth day and why war was created on the ninth.
Wow. Very nice. I like that, Paul.
Thank you.
And there's the ninth. The poem raises a certain tension with its title, wondering what the ninth will be and how we will get there.
Yeah, an old poet, Bob Randolph, who I think is still alive, and in his I don't know if you know Bob Randolph.
I don't.
He's an old resistance poet, a man who traveled to Cuba many times when Americans weren't supposed to. But Bob's got to be in his mid to late 80s now, and I think he's still out there grinding away as best he can. And he's the one who told me the end of your poem should always be just like the beginning of your poem. You should start and end the poem with the exact same line. And I can't say that I've entirely followed that philosophy, but this is one of those cases where that strategy really works.
Yeah, it definitely works well. So what projects are you working on now? I remember reading that you have a new chapbook coming out called 19th Street Station from FOC Chap Editions in 2011.
That is correct. FOC Chap. So that's part of the Full of Crow Press or Full of Crow Magazine.
Oh, I see.
And FOC stands for the Full of Crow. And the publisher, Lynn Alexander, has been just one of my most incredible supporters, and I really owe her so much. And I just, I feel like she's a visionary, and she's doing so much, like me, she's doing so much for so many other writers, and we don't see this as some way to further our glory. We almost feel like a call to service.
Right.
So I'm just very honored she's felt that way about my writing. And 19th Street Station is a meditation on the slow transformation of my city, Oakland, downtown Oakland, as it tries to reinvent itself in an age when we are no longer a manufacturing, labor-based society. We're becoming more of a service, information-based society. And you have a lot of these old towns with their old labor structures going through a lot of growing pains, trying to adapt to that. And Oakland has come up with some really innovative, original ideas, and some of them, again, spectacular failures. Others seem very promising. And my chapbook is just sort of a meditation, a snapshot of sketches of what I'm experiencing when I'm in that place, in the present. Or one of those moments when I'm not so much focusing on the past or the future and take a moment for the present. And I hope my chap conveys that.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to reading that. You mentioned Bob Kaufman earlier, but I'm wondering if there are other particular poets, some famous, some not, that you would want to draw listeners' attention to if they don't already know them.
Not so famous, but going very back, the old Nicaraguan poet Ruben Dario is just a massive force in Spanish and Latin poetry. And he was a modernist before people really knew what modernists were. He predates Rambo a little bit from the 19th century with some of his work. And he was a young prodigy in Nicaragua who quickly got out of Nicaragua because it was a difficult place to be an artist in the 19th century there, and found his way, I believe, to Chile, and because that was a much more accommodating country for artists. If you can find Ruben Dario anywhere, grab his books and hang on to them. Even if you don't read Spanish, grab them and get them translated, because he's very, very hard to find, and he's a treasure in our midst. And I'm also a big fan of Pablo Neruda and Emily Dickinson.
Mm-hmm.
Emily Dickinson, I think, is a very I think a lot of people don't understand her and don't understand how ahead of her time she was, how modern she was, and they think of a spinster sort of cloistered in her room, not going anywhere. But when you really get into her work, you see somebody who was very much in touch with what was going on and simply creating a workspace for herself. Emily really gave herself a room of her own, as it were, and understood that she needed to do that to be the visionary that she was. So, and some unknown poets. I can refer you to some up and comers. Guys like Joel Landmine and M.G. Martin and Sam Sachs are some guys coming out of the Bay Area who are really, really hot and who I really recommend to our listeners out there if they can. And you can find these guys on YouTube. So you can just go to YouTube and type in Sam Sachs, M.G. Martin, and I think, I don't know if Joel's got any work out there, but if you can find it, take a look at it. These guys are fantastic.
Excellent. Well, I will check them out. Well, Paul, it's been a pleasure to have you on the radio show and to hear some of your work. I hope that you will drop me an email when your new chapbook comes out, because I think listeners would like to hear a taste of that once it's available for purchase.
I really appreciate it, Andy. I've had a lot of fun on the show, and yeah, I'll definitely send you a copy. And if you like, I keep you posted on various readings we've got going on here too.
Well, that sounds wonderful. I'll make sure to get on your mailing list.
Thank you so much, Andy.
Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. We're coming up in the last 6 or 7 minutes of this program. Let's take a moment to hear from our sponsor. Here's a message from the YOLO Federal Credit Union.
This hour of programming is brought to you courtesy of the YOLO County Federal Credit Union. The YOLO County Federal Credit Union is a nonprofit financial cooperative with locations throughout YOLO County. The YOLO County Federal Credit Union offers a wide range of financial services and can be reached by phone at 530-668-2700 or online at yolofcu.org.
Natomas Marketplace in Sacramento reminds us that we're all concerned about driving during the holidays due to the number of people who may be drinking and driving. Remember that concern before you have that one for the road. Take care of yourself and take care of others. Don't drink and drive. Brought to you by Natomas Marketplace, home of Walmart, Home Depot, Regal Cinemas, Michael's Crafts, Ross and Staples, off I-80 Truxell Road in North Natomas, Sacramento, wishing their many friends and customers a very safe and joyous holiday season. Speaking of Brian Ang before, I know that if Brian Ang were hosting this radio show, he would make sure to throw in a Robert Creeley poem. Here's one that's saved for the radio. It's called Somewhere. Somewhere by Robert Creeley. The galloping collection of boards are the house which I afforded one evening to walk into just as the night came down. Dark inside, the candle lit of its own free will. The attic groaned then. The stairs led me up into the air. From outside, it must have seemed a wonder that it was the inside he as me saw in the dark there. We are just about out of time for this radio show. I'd like to thank my guest, Paul Corman Roberts. If you want to find out more about him, then you can always visit paulcormanroberts.com. Corman is C-O-R-M-A-N. A couple of events coming up. One that I'm looking forward to attending this season is the Nutcracker Ballet. It happens every year between Thanksgiving and Christmas. It starts on Friday, November 26th this year. How refreshing it would be to go see delightful Davis children dancing in a ballet rather than spending your time in line at a big box store celebrating, commemorating, or regretfully acknowledging what's sometimes called Black Friday. The Nutcracker Ballet is showing this coming Friday, November 26th, at 2:30 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. at the Veterans Memorial Center, where you can experience the magic of this classic holiday ballet as choreographed by Baryshnikov and performed, not by Baryshnikov, of course, but by the exceptionally talented local Davis Ballet students known as Haneke and Company. The Davis Art Center instructor Haneke Losi and her students joyously present an enchanting professional production set to Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker Suite, replete with Clara, the Nutcracker Prince, a growing Christmas tree, and a dream world of spectacularly costumed characters. Something that all of us should do at least once. If not perform it, then go see it. You have a chance this coming Friday, starting Friday, and continuing onward, including Saturday, Sunday, and beyond. We're just about out of time. Thanks very much to all of you for tuning in to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. I'd like to wish you and yours a happy Thanksgiving. And thank you for your ongoing support of this radio station. Keep your dial right here because we've got some great music coming up for you to enjoy. And I'll see you next week for the December 1st edition of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. See you then.